So we solved many topological problems and different other problems. We had sessions on proteins, on DNA, and now the probably most interesting part is coming. So we will have a talk on RNA structure and pseudonodes, and the talk will be by Shijie Chen from University of Missouri, Columbia.
Okay, first I want to thank the organizers for inviting me here. And when I was asked to provide a title abstract, I was thinking that I should talk about something related to knots, no matter if it's fake or real. So I'm going to talk about the knots in RNA. It's fake knots, it's called pseudonots. And as the application of pseudonot folding, I will talk about the ribosomal frame shifting. So we all know that what RNA is, it's the closest brother of DNA, and I want to waste time talk about these details about what RNA is. The only difference is it's a 2' hydroxyl, we all know that. And also we know that just like a DNA, RNA can form bases, can form base pairs. G and C and A and U, we don't have T, we have U. And these base pairs will bring different parts of the RNA chain together to form the second structure, especially continuous base pairs, just like DNA will form helix. Okay, so RNA structures can be classified according to different levels. The simplest level is just a helix or the hairpin structure like this. This is a planar representation of the real structure. This is a helix. You have 1, 2, 3 continuous base pairs, and this is hairpin loop. And unlike DNA, RNA helix is A form. It's not B form. If you go to higher level, if the hairpin loop, this loop, forms a base pair with a single-stranded region like this, outside the loop. This kind of structure is called a pseudonot. And if this loop is a hairpin loop, we call it H-type pseudonot, which is the simplest and most frequently occurring pseudonot structure in nature RNAs. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So basically, a pseudonot has four parts. One is two helices and two loops. So we've got helix one, helix two, and loop one and loop two. And it's called a pseudonot. It's not a real knot. If it's a real knot, it will be look like this kind of structure. But actually, as you can see, what really happens for pseudonots is like this structure. If you pull them, it will be totally entangled, disentangled. So, okay. And if you go to higher level, they can form so-called tRNA structure, transfer RNA structures. Transfer RNA structure, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 helices. This is one helix, and this is other helix brought in from different regions. They form coaxial stacked helices. Peter Schuster to talk about this on Monday, I think. So, but the most relevant thing for tRNA to today's talk is the loop region. This region has three bases, which is called anticodon loops. These three bases will form critical functions in the translation, gene translation process. And mathematically, we can classify protein structure, RNA structures into secondary, tertiary structures using graphs. Of course, in the field, the definition, exact definition of secondary, tertiary structures still it's still ambiguous, but we follow this more clear-cut way, which means if you use a graph, this straight line means the covalent bond backbone, and these curved lines means a base pair. Then, if the graph contains, like this graph contains no crossing links, we call them secondary structures. If it contains crossing links, then we call them tertiary structures. In that sense, pseudonot is a simple tertiary structure. Okay. And secondary structure folding theory is well developed. But tertiary structure folding is not so well developed. The bottleneck is we don't know how to calculate the free energy for a given tertiary, for given pseudonut structure. Here is a decomposition of the free energy. We know it's the enthalpy minus the T temperature times the entropy. And for a pseudonut, usually the folding free energy delta G is about several kcal per mole, like 2 or 5 kcal per mole. But delta H and delta T delta S can be 10 kcal per mole, like 20 or 30 or 40 even kcal per mole. So really the stability of a pseudonut is determined by delicate balance between enthalpy and entropy. And we know that like a DNA for a polynucleotide like RNA, each backbone, each nucleotide has 7 torsional angles. So the change of the conformational entropy in the folding process can be huge. So the calculation of the entropy is really the bottleneck for pseudonut calculation. And if you look at closely at the structure, which I don't show the atomic structure here, because it's too complicated, more complicated story, the two loops are, they are not symmetric. The loop one actually spans across this helix 2 along in this narrow groove, deep narrow groove. We call it a major groove for A-form RNA. And loop 2 actually goes through this shallow, wider groove of helix 1. So they're not symmetric. So this detailed geometry, detailed structure of the groove, though, becomes extremely important when we consider loop helix interactions, exclude volume interactions. So we actually calculated the loop entropies for the pseudonut loops, for loop 1 and loop 2. And here's our model. The calculation is based on a so-called virtual bond model. Originally, the virtual bond model for polynucleotide was proposed by Wilmer also in the 1960s. So the idea is, if you look at the backbone, the CO backbone, the CO bonds are more likely tend to stay in the trans state. That means if they are in trans state, these bonds and these bonds will be coplanar. So we can replace these bonds by single bond. It's called virtual bond. But the limitation of original Wilmer-Olsen's virtual bond theory is it uses two bonds. It cannot take care of the base orientation and the orientation of the sugar pucker. So we actually extended the model in order to consider the orientation of this the base and the sugar pucker. We introduced this third bond. So we call the three-vector virtual bond model. So that's the picture. The good thing for this model is that if you do a survey of the existing known RNA structure, we find that these three bonds are actually rhodomeric, which means they prefer to take some discrete values. So we can discretize the conformational space. That's great. And so we also found that we can actually, because due to discreteness, they prefer to stay in the typical polymer trans and gauge plus gauge minus states, so we can use a diamond lattice to configure these three bonds. Okay. And based on that simple model, we enumerate for a given helix and the loop, we enumerate all the possible conformations using self-avoiding walks in the diamond lattice. So we get a number of conformations of the loop for a given helix length for loop 1 and loop 2 separately. And from that, we take K log omega that gives us entropy. And so we can tabulate this entropy for different helices and different lengths of the loops, and that gives a huge big table. So we can just read the table, calculate the free energy for a given pseudonut. But I do want to highlight some interesting things here. As we can see, this table, this one is for loop 1 and this lower one is for loop 2. For loop 1, which across a deep narrow groove, So even if the helix is a 5, 6, 7 base pair, one nucleotide will be good enough to make a loop. But for the L2, for the loop 2, which across the shell wider groove, for 5 or 6 or 7 base pairs, you need at least 4 or 5 nucleotides to make a loop. That's due to the detailed geometry of the groove. So this kind of detailed structure of grooves are important. So for a given pseudonaut, you can read these tables, the entropies. And for the helical part, we can take the energy parameters and measure it experimentally for each base stack, add them together. So this is shows an example for some. If you want to know more, you want to apply the theory to your calculation, you can check a recent article for annual review. It's all in the folder for conformation studies for the kinetics and the electrostatics, which I wrote for annual review. Okay, so but theory, we don't know whether theory is right or wrong. So we did a very extensive experimental test. There are two types of tests. One type is to do the thermodynamic melting calculation to compare with the experimental data. The other test is the structure prediction. Here is a result for the structure prediction. And we tested for 14 pseudonauts taken from some other literature. And we compared our model, which is this red line, with this other model, existing pseudonaut model, which is dashed lines. So this x-axis is just a label of each molecule, each sequence, and the y-axis is a measure for the accuracy of the model. To make it simple, the one means perfect agreement, so larger means better. So as we can see, our model makes much better prediction than other models. The only difference between our model and the other model is the entropy parameter. So it's really this detailed consideration of the loop helix interaction, extruder interaction is important. Doesn't make a difference. And we can also calculate more complicated loops. And also, recently, we are able to treat the base triples, which is the tertiary interaction between loop and helix. And at our all-atom model, we can predict the structure around the 2 angstroms. This is all-atom RMC. Okay, great. So that's all for pseudonaut folding. So next, I'm going to talk about the ribosomal phase shift. So what's that? Well, we know that for a virus, especially for a retrovirus, most viruses like HIV and the SARS virus, all these viruses use RNA to carry the gene. And they use RNA to make proteins, and these proteins are used to make more viruses. For example, this is a cartoon picture shows this is RNA, and this is carries the viral genome. And they make actually several types of proteins, but I want to highlight the two types here. One is, it's called a POL. POL is this protein is used as an enzyme to catalyze, for example, reverse transcription. And the other type of protein is called gap protein. It's a structural protein to assemble, to pack it, to make the package of this virus. So both are important. And these proteins are made from the viral genome, viral RNA itself. So from any molecular biology or biochemistry textbook, we know how a protein is made from messenger RNA. We know for messenger RNA, it carries codons. Three bases is one codon. And in the translation process, when the gene is expressed, the tRNA, which I talked earlier, so the tRNA comes in, and these three anticodons base pair with the codons, and then it moves along the messenger RNA, and on the other side, it carries amino acid, then protein is made. Okay, it's simple. So this is just a cartoon picture shows what I just said. So if you follow, it moves from 5' to 3'. Okay, so it keeps moving until it sees a stop codon. Here is UAG. This is a signal that tells you the translation process should be stopped. Okay, so great. So when the virus makes the proteins, it stops. It gives you the gag protein. It gives you gag protein if this gene is a gag open reading frame. But actually, virus is extremely smart. It's much smarter than a human being even. So what it makes efficiently, it can make extremely efficient viral gene expression by a mechanism called a -1 phase shift. Basically, what it says is, when it sees the stop code, it should stop. But virus can do something that when it sees the stop code, it won't stop. By shifting, this messenger RNA shifted from 5' to 3' by 1 unit, like this. So shifted by 1 unit. So when it's shifted, the next one is not a UAG, it's not a stop codon anymore. It's AUA, right? It's AUA. AUA actually is the codon for isoleucine, so it will keep going. So it will keep going until you see the next stop codon. That's a stop. So the product of this process will be a polyprotein. It's a gag pole. It's a continuous gag plus pole. But this process occurs stochastically with probability. It can stop at the gag step or it can keep going using the -1 phase shift. So it turns out that the ratio between these two products is critical for the replication of virus. Because you can imagine if you don't have enough polymerase, then the reverse transcription cannot be carried successfully. If you don't have enough gag, then it cannot be assembled. Okay, so the ratio is critical. And we want to calculate friendship efficiency, which is determined, is defined as a ratio. Also, I want to point out that because this phase shift mechanism so far is, according to our best knowledge, is used only by virus. No any human being cells use this mechanism to express genes. So if we can design drugs to inhibit this process, to change the ratio, so then we can kill the virus. That's the whole idea. That's the motivation of this research. But first of all, we want to understand the mechanism of this process. So here is a hypothesized mechanism. The idea is in this gene translation process, the downstream 5' messenger RNA form a structure, like pseudonauts. The structure has a size, for example, for pseudonauts, it is 37 by 18 angstrom, typical size. It's larger than this tunnel in the ribosome, which is 17 by 20. So it got stuck. And this causes ribosome pause. It can be like a half a minute in vitro. In vivo, we don't know. And also, when it's stuck, lots of things can be happened during this period of time. So one thing happened is the tRNA is not static, it moves. It moves, translocation. This move, the motion of the tRNA here, will pull this messenger RNA by about 1 nanometer, 9 angstroms. So to make an even simpler picture, here is what model is. So in this process, when it's got stuck, the downstream structure can be a pseudonaut like this one, or some other structures, not necessarily a pseudonaut. And the distance is actually pulled by a nanometer, 1 nanometer. It goes from 3.3 nanometer to 4.2 nanometer. More detailed study shows. So in this pruning process, a force is generated, right? This strand is stretched. And this force, if it's large enough, will break the base pairs between anticodon and the codon to pull it this way so that the force can be relaxed. So that's the idea, that's the model. And recent experiments have supported this model. Here is a experimental result published in PNS by Hansen's group. So by Hansen et al. So this experiment shows three molecules. They PK into pseudonauts, three pseudonauts. This is a pseudonaut. This pseudonaut is found that doesn't cause friend shifting. And this one called high free shifting, this one called low free shifting. And they did the laser tutor experiment to pull these pseudonyms. And then they measured the force extension curve. We found that the high free shifting pseudonaut shows a higher force. And the low free shifting pseudonaut shows a low force to break it, a low mechanical stability. So this clearly shows that there is some kind of correlation between the force mechanical stability and the free shifting efficiency. Okay. So here is a simple model of our calculation, of our theory. So as I said, in this pulling process, the force is generated. So we use the freely jointed chain model for the single-stranded part. And we all know, I suppose we all know this, what this is. So I will skip this part. But the idea here is that, okay, great. So the force, if you look at that equation, the force is determined by the extension x and also by how long this chain is. The longer the chain is, the force is smaller, right? So, but the idea is the downstream structure, this is the single-stranded part which generates force. But this part, the downstream structure can form all kinds of different ensemble of structures during that period of time. So as this part is slowly is moving, is stretched, this part, the structure is fluctuating. When you have fluctuating structure, the length of this single strand part is also varied, it's fluctuating. That gives a fluctuating force. So to get an estimate for the force, we have to do ensemble average over all the possible conformations of RNA for the given sequence. So that's what the calculation is. So basically, we need to calculate the free energy from the partition function for a given x, for a given stage of this pooling. So, and from the free energy, we can calculate the mean force, the mean tension in the single-stranded part. So I'm going to show three real examples of our calculation. One is for the sugarcane yellow leaf virus, and this is a famous virus for making this free shifting. And experiments, this is a sugarcane, it looks very good. And we found that the experimental found that the efficiency is about 15%. Most virus, the efficiency is about 10, around 10, like HIV is about 11, 10%. And for this one, it's 15%. Okay, so here is the biochemically determined structure of the RNA that makes the phase shift. So this is tRNA. The tRNA bound here, anticodon codon here, and this is the single-stranded part here, and this is the structure. It's a pseudonaut, and this part makes the bit here with this. It's a pseudonaut. This is downstream RNA structure here. So we actually calculated the force. We calculate force as a function of the extension during the pulling process, pulled from 3.3 to 4.3 nanometer. So we calculate force extension curve. And if you look at this black solid line, that's our force extension curve for the system before frame shift. And this gray line is the one after frame shifted. So, and as you can see that initially you see a little force here, something happened here. Then if you keep going, the huge force, the major peak is here. Something big happened, some larger structure change happened. Then it suddenly dropped to a much lower force. So we want to know what's going on. We suspect that the phase shift happened here because that's the largest force of the pull. And here is the structure change we found that's initially before pulling the strand. It's this structure. And the structure agrees exactly with the experimentally determined structure. And as the pulling going on, you first break this AU base pair. That's the first small peak. And then the second peak is to break this base stack, AU GC. This is a super, very stable, super stable. So it takes a large, huge force to break it. That's what you see. But actually, then we believe the friendship happened after the, due to this large force. Once it happened, then it's shifted along this direction by one unit. So this C entered into the single-stranded part. So the whole structure, the force is relaxed. So that's what happened, we believe. And the second example is the infectious bronchitis virus. And this is the structure determined from biochemical experiment. And you see it's a pseudonaut. You have one helix, another helix, loop, and a loop. And we predict the structure and agree with exactly with the experiment. So, but this virus is very strange actually. It has a super high efficiency, 48% efficiency. And we also did the calculation, calculated the force extension curve. We found that this molecule showed a huge force. It's about 100 piconewton. It's much bigger than the previous one, which is about 50 piconewton. So we indeed we see a correlation between force and efficiency. But and also I want to point out that the first peak, small peak, corresponded to the break of this GC. And the second peak corresponding break of this red one, the second GC. You may wonder, huh, why the second one has a much larger force? Because they all look the same. It's all GC, GC. What's the difference? Well, actually the difference is because this one is, the first one is much less stable. And we found that breaking this one, that free energy change is about 1.2 kcal per mole, and second one is 3.4 kcal per mole. It's not due to the free energy difference, it's not due to the change, the difference in the base stacking energies. It's due to this loop. The big change comes from the different loop entropy change. You may wonder why this looks not so different. Why you have such a huge loop change? Well, that's because if you count the number of nucleotides in this loop, 1, 2, 3, 4, almost 10. It's close to the one cycle period of the helix. So the groove will make things happen. So anyway, so this virus is also extremely important, interesting, because people found that if you do some mutation, for example, if you change the GC into AU, the phase shift efficiency is reduced dramatically by 30%. So we also calculated the force, and we found indeed that the force is reduced dramatically. It's reduced dramatically. And also, I want to make a point that we found that the phase shift efficiency is not correlated to the global thermal stability of the pseudonaut. For a long time, people believe the pseudonaut, the efficiency is determined by the stability of the pseudonaut. But we found we don't see this correlation. Here is an example to show this. For example, here, this is a mutation for the IBV. It's a mutation inside the stem. This will cause a huge change global stability, thermal stability. It will destabilize the molecule, the pseudonaut by 7.1 kcal per mole. That's huge. But our calculation shows that the change in the force, in the mechanical force, is small. It's very small. And indeed, the experiments found that the phase shift change is zero almost. So indeed, this shows that the correlation of the phase shift efficiency is to the force, not to the global stability. Okay. But you may wonder, okay, so it's all pseudonauts. What about other non-pseudonauts? Indeed, we found that virus can also use non-pseudonauts to promote friendship. Here's an example for HIV type B. And this is the structure, NMR structure imagined since Sam Butcher's lab. And we did the calculation. We found that we agree with the experiment exactly. And we did the force calculation. We found that the largest force peak happened when the first one, this lower stem, this helix is broken. And the largest force is caused by this base stack. It's stuck here. You need a huge, because this one is very stable, you need a huge force to break it. That one created the larger force to cause the friendship. So as a conclusion for this model, for this theory, I presented this figure. This figure actually shows a very extensive test of the model for different experimentally measured systems. And these red triangles shows the experimental data, the frame shift efficiency, and the this x-axis is the force. And this blue line is a fitted curve. Actually, this curve can be calculated from our theory. We found that because we believe the phase shift efficiency is correlated, is proportional to the exponential of the work divided by kT. The work is a mechanical work done by the force in this pulling process. We can calculate that work from the theory. And we found that this fitted line agrees with the theoretically calculated curve beautifully. So as a conclusion, I want to point out that the phase shift we found is correlated to mechanical stability, not the thermal stability, not the global thermal stability. And we have an analytical formula to calculate phase shift from a given sequence. Also, I want to make a point that then you may wonder, is higher stability always desirable? To have a higher efficiency, you need a higher stability? That's wrong. It's not necessarily true. Why? Because eventually, after it's shifted, you want to have helicase. To unwind the RNS structure, to let the frame, let the translation going on. So you don't want it too stable. And you may ask, what about the other tertiary interactions? As I said, we are working on that, and we can treat that. What about kinetics? That's a good question. Actually, we did some kinetics calculation, but this application is to human telomerase RNA. I show this paper because I'm sure that people working on chromosome will be interested in telomeres. But I won't talk about that today. And also, what about the ion effects? Because on Wednesday's talk, and in both Tomas' talk and I think Sarah's talk, people raised the issue of magnesium ions. And yesterday's talk, Len's talk, people also raised the magnesium ions. Well, actually, magnesium ion is critical for RNA folding. Without no magnesium ion means no RNA tertiary folding. So we actually are developing magnesium ion folding here. So I show this paper because I guess most of the people here are for DNA, so I show this DNA paper. It's about the magnesium ion effects on DNA bending and the DNA-DNA interactions. Okay, great. And then the final question is it possible to find a real knot in RNA? But my answer is unlikely. The reason is the following. Because if you have a real knot, that means that will significantly stabilize the structure. But unlike DNA or proteins, RNA functions through multiple structure changes. For example, in splicing, the small nuclear RNA undergoes 7 structure changes in series. A to B, B to C, 7 structure changes. It's large structure rearrangement in the function, in the splicing process. But if you have not, then the structure is completely restrained. It's totally too stabilized. So those kind of metastability becomes impossible. So from the evolutionary point of view, that's not desirable for RNA. So finally, I want to thank my postdoc who did all the calculating student knots and my students, also my collaborators, and thank NIH for the grant support. And thank you all. Yeah, do it.
Well, we have some questions, but especially if you use the mic.
The battery is somehow.
We might also use. Okay, so sorry.
It seems that in that picture for the secondary structure of a pseudonaut, you've got, on the left, you come up, you have a number of sort of helical interwines, and then you have a number of helical interwines here. If you've got at least 10 base pairs down here and at least 10 base pairs up there, it seems you've got a knot for sure. I mean, you had a picture of it in one of your slides, an honest-to-God knot.
I know.
You went by one there, I guess, but...
I think you're talking about this one.
Yes.
Yeah. See, this guy, right?
Well, you had another picture, the one when it was on the top, where it was really knotted. That one.
This one, yeah.
So if you've got at least 10 on the left and 10 on the upper right, it's going to be knotted. So if they're long enough, it'll be knotted, and the longer they are, the worse
they're
right. Not.
If you have more than one period, if you have more than one period, if you have one, more
so
than one,
you get three or four, I guess. It's always okay.
If you have more than one period, you're right. But for naturally occurring RNA, that's unlikely.
Well, but the way you have drawn it, but there is no further extension of the. Or it's you were just finishing it because for the point of interest, or there is still a longer extension?
If you have longer one, yeah. Of course it wind up or goes like this. And
yeah, no, I'm saying, but not complementary to the loop. There is no, it is exactly like you have it, or there is a still a extension which is not complementary to the loop, which would have then a problem of threading or.
Well. So for naturally occurring pseudonauts, usually it's less than 10 base pairs. Well, I can show you one picture, like this one. This one looks like a knot. Looks like a real, real knot.
Yes.
Right? Uh-huh. So if you have more than one period of the helix, sure,
already when you will have more than five, you would have a probability bigger than 50% of going around. Yes, if you have more than five, and because that will already have a turn, and so it will be doing it. But the question which I was posing: how long in reality is this non-complementary part, which you need to force to thread through the loop? Because if it's long, it's a difficulty to do this threading. So my question was: if you look at the structure, where actually it finishes? On your drawings, you presented just the interesting part, or you presented the entire structure?
Well, in my real calculation, the one I talked about later, for real sequence, I presented the whole thing. It's not just a part of it, it's the whole thing.
Okay. Are there more questions? Oh, okay, if not, let us come to speaker.